Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. Today, this episode marks our first episode of season 18. As I mentioned last week, we are kind of hitting pause on the Bynum season right now, season 17, until we have more information and we get a chance to interview Chris. And as I told you, my goal throughout season 18 is to produce episodes every week that are educating and are helping promote people that are doing good work, trying to just help us put more tools in our toolbox in our fight against a broken criminal justice system to try to do some good. In today's episode, it turns out it's going to be timely. It was actually supposed to be last week, but it's the episode that I've been talking about producing for a couple of weeks now. And that is to just really break down in one episode very clearly what your rights are if you have an interaction or an encounter with the police, what they are allowed to do, what you can expect, and what you should do in those scenarios. Now, I need to add the caveat to this that, as you all know, I am not a lawyer, so this is not legal advice. This is me sharing the information that I have been studying, well, for years throughout my course of doing this podcast for going on 11 years now, but also more intently for the last year, where I've been studying to get my bachelor's degree in criminal justice. So I've been studying all these laws from the police officer's perspective. So I feel like I've got a pretty good wealth of knowledge here, but I definitely don't claim to be an expert. If you really have any questions, you should talk to a lawyer and not listen to a podcaster. That being said, I hope that you'll get something out of this. Now, I'm going to tell you my plan going through this. I did not write a script for this. I have done a ton of research. I have three different long documents of research that are outlined out for me to share with you guys. So hopefully this won't be too clunky. Mostly we're relying on Erica. We love you, Erica, to make this seem pretty smooth when you're listening to it, to give you an idea of where this is going. So in the first segment, we're going to be talking about your rights, for you to understand your rights, where these rules come from, and what you can expect with interactions with law enforcement. In the second segment, I have a few kind of real-world scenarios that I'm going to run you through so you can know if you are in a situation like this, what you can expect, what you should do, so on and so forth. Now, the third segment I mentioned on this week's follow-up, I'm really, really uncomfortable having the conversation, but for a number of reasons, it's a conversation that I feel like I need to have. When I look at my job as a podcaster, as the person that you all are tuning into every week listening to, you look for me for truth and justice, And you look to me, have always, through everything we've done, to separate noise and fiction from fact. And as all of you know, I'm not going to, this episode is not about this, but I'm also not going to pretend that it's not super relevant. The incident in Minneapolis over the last week, where a woman was shot and killed by an ICE officer. All of you have heard about it. All of you have seen a million videos about it, I'm certain. And everybody has very strong feelings about it. What prompted me to add this last segment into this episode was a listener asking me a question on Facebook. It was not for the follow-up, but leading up to the follow-up, where I'd already mentioned that I was going to be putting this episode together. And this listener, I'm not even going to say their name. It's a listener that's been around for a long time. I have a ton of respect for this person, so I didn't even want to talk about their name or anything. But there was a word in their question that frankly scared the shit out of me. And I'll explain why in the last segment. And the reason I'm kind of prepping you all for this now is because some of you may not want to listen to the last segment. And that's okay. I hope you do listen, but I'm not going to be mad at you if you don't. But the listener asked, essentially, when I'm doing the episode where I'm going through what your rights are and what interactions should look like with police and what you can expect and what you should do, that I should also talk about the differences between interacting with what they called legitimate law enforcement officers as compared to ICE. And it was that word legitimate that, like I said, it scared me. And I'll explain why in the third segment. I'm going into this knowing that I'm probably going to upset some of my listeners. I just want you to know that's not my intention. Everything I'm going to be sharing with you is not a investigation into that case or anything like that. I'm just going to be sharing with you facts regarding what we're already talking about today and what the actual laws say in regards to ICE and how those compare to other police and law enforcement agencies. But before we get into that, we're going to go right back to the beginning for you to really know your rights. And I had this kind of broken down, this first segment, into 8 sections is the way I researched it. So to give you guys a little peek behind the curtain, the way I put this together, I research this in the same way I research every paper that I have to write for my criminal justice classes. So, you know, I was going through all my different sources and breaking it down section by section. And when I had it all together, instead of putting it into a script, I thought I'm just going to go right through it. So each section will have kind of a little topic where we'll hit on some bullet points. And then I wrote up a little kind of practical explanation, kind of putting it all into clear terms. So we're going to go through those 8 sections here during this first segment. And the first section is all about Miranda. And I titled this The Myth Versus Reality of What Miranda Warnings Are. Now, for those of you that don't know, I'm sure probably every single one of you does. But the Miranda warnings are a requirement for the police officers during an interrogation to inform you that you have the right to remain silent and you have the right to an attorney and that they will appoint an attorney to you if you can't afford one. This is all based on constitutional case law. While it's based on the Constitution, it's based on the case of Ernesto Miranda years and years ago, who, by the way, if you ever read about him, was actually guilty of the crime he was being interrogated about, but the conviction was thrown out because they didn't inform him of his rights. So that's kind of where it all came from. Now, the myth versus reality. One is Miranda does not determine whether an arrest is legal. And this is a question that I get all the time. Anytime I know somebody either that's close to me or on the periphery of people who are close to me, for some reason, everybody thinks that I'm like a lawyer and they always want to call me and they're like, well, they arrested me, but they never read me my rights. So it's not legit, is it? That's not true. That's not what Miranda is about. So you just need to know that Miranda has nothing to do with the legitimacy of your arrest. You should also know that Miranda only affects whether a statement can be used in court. That's it. It's all about admissibility. That's where Miranda comes in. It's an evidence rule. It's not a police procedure rule. So you need to know that lack of being Mirandized does not end a case. And silence and invocation of your right to silence matter a lot more than the warning itself. Because as you all know, we've seen this time and time and time again in cases where people talking is what got them in trouble and got them wrongfully convicted in many cases. Police obviously want you to keep talking. So unless you are explicitly clear that you are invoking your rights, they will keep pushing and keep poking and keep prodding. So the practical explanation I wrote up for that, and I pretty much explained it, is what most people get wrong about Miranda is thinking that it's a requirement for arrest. It is not. Miranda only matters if police are questioning you while you're in custody, which I'm going to get into more here in a little bit, but that's a key point there. If you talk voluntarily, or if you're not in custody, what you say can usually be used against you. The warning itself does not protect you. Your choices do. So that means if you just walk up to a cop or a cop walks up to you and starts chatting with you and you say something incriminating, there is no, well, he didn't read me my rights. He wasn't required to read you your rights. So just know what you say can and most likely will be used in court against you. Section 2 is the constitutional foundations of the things we're talking about today. So first, let's talk about the Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment is what protects you against compelled self-incrimination. Keyword there is compelled. As I just said a second ago, if you just go up to an officer or they're talking to you and you're not in custody and you say something incriminating, that's not compelling you to do it. You did that. So the Fifth Amendment protects you from being compelled to give incriminating evidence against yourself. It applies to testimonial evidence, not physical evidence. So just because they Mirandize you and you don't talk and you don't give any statement, that doesn't mean your fingerprints, your DNA, any other physical evidence can't be used against you. Obviously, they can, and I'm sure you all already know that. And also part of the Fifth Amendment is where that right to an attorney during questioning comes in. Now, the Sixth Amendment guarantees your right to counsel after formal charges. So this is different than your Fifth Amendment rights where Miranda comes from. The Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights to counsel are different. Sixth Amendment means once you're formally charged. So think, for those longtime listeners, think in Adnan Syed's case, think Jay Wilds. Remember, they kept waiting and waiting and waiting to actually charge Jay for like months after he had already confessed to the crime. And the speculation is the reason they did that is because as soon as he's formally charged, now they have to provide him with an attorney. So that's why they waited. So that's Sixth Amendment rights. Now, the 14th Amendment you'll hear people talk about sometimes is what applies these rights to all the states. The 14th Amendment makes these federal protections. So you can't, you know, go down to, you know, the state of Illinois and they say, well, we're not giving you a right to an attorney in our state. The 14th Amendment is what protects against that. So practical explanation, the Fifth Amendment protects you from being forced to talk. It does not stop you from talking voluntarily. Miranda exists to protect that Fifth Amendment during custodial questioning. The Sixth Amendment is different. Once you're formally charged, the right to a lawyer attaches automatically. Before that, you have to invoke it. So understand that. Be clear here. Until you're charged and have a formal charge against you, you have to say, I want an attorney, in order for you to have that right to an attorney, in order for you to get an attorney. Once you're charged, now you are automatically entitled to an attorney, whether you ask for it or not. Understanding which right applies depends on where you are in that process. So now let's move on to Section 3, and these are types of police encounters. And this has to do with your custodial situation, which is what is going to trigger Miranda at some point. So voluntary encounters mean you are free to leave at any time. Investigatory detentions are temporary and they're limited. We're going to talk in a little bit here about something called Terry stops. And when you're stopped under suspicion, those are investigatory detentions. And you can be in custody, but it's, again, it's just temporary. It's limited. You've probably seen on TV where they're like, well, we can only hold them for 24 hours and we got to let them go. That's what they're talking about here. Now, custody means you are not free to leave. And Miranda depends on custody and interrogation. That is the key here. In order for the police to be required to read you your Miranda rights and have you sign off that you understand them, you have to be in custody, not free to leave, and they have to be interrogating you. Because I've heard this question many times before, too. Somebody gets arrested, they're booked, they're put in jail, and they're like, they never read me my rights. Like, well, they never asked you a question either. They didn't need, you know, it's only for interrogation. That's the only time it matters. And the key here is, if you don't know, ask. If you don't know if this is a custodial interview, if the police bring you into the police station, Oftentimes people feel like, well, I'm in the police station, I'm in custody. That is not the case. If you're free to stand up and walk out of that police station, you are not in custody. One of the things that the police will do is they want you to feel like you can't leave. They don't want you to leave, obviously. So you can always and should always ask the question, am I free to leave? And I promise you, in most cases, they will try to dance around that question. They'll be like, well, why do you want to leave? Why don't you want to help? You're going to look guilty if you leave. You just keep asking the question, am I free to leave? Yes or no, am I free to leave? And they are required to answer that question. But what they are not required to do is volunteer that information. Supreme Court case law has been very clear on this. The police have no obligation to tell you you are free to leave. You have to ask. Now, the practical explanation here for the types of police encounters, every police encounter does not carry the same risk. If you're free to leave, anything you say is almost always fair game in a court of law. If you're detained, you still don't automatically get Miranda protection. And even in custody, Miranda only matters if police are questioning you. The biggest mistake people make is assuming that detention equals protection. It does not. And now let's dig a little deeper into that and move into Section 4, which is custody and interrogation. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The new year means new health goals. Not just for your body, but for your finances too. But did you know financial health is directly related to identity protection? You need LifeLock because your personal info is in endless places that are outside of your control. It only takes one mistake, and not even your mistake, to expose you to identity theft and lost funds. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your subscription money back. Don't face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft alone. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Key points here. Custody is based on whether a reasonable person feels free to leave. So there's where the ambiguity comes in, and it's not something you want to risk. So if you're making an argument that, well, I wasn't Mirandized, and the police are saying she wasn't in custody, and you're saying, yes, I was, I couldn't leave, and they're like, she was free to leave at any time, it can be argued before a court that any reasonable person in that situation would not know that they were not in custody and would not know that they're free to leave. I'll tell you from my research, it's very rarely a winning argument. So just ask the question. Now, what does interrogation mean? Interrogation includes direct questions and their functional equivalent. And again, what I keep stressing over and over and over again is that volunteered statements are admissible. One of the types of scenarios that you could get yourself into is if you're at or near a crime scene and a police officer just walks up to you and starts asking you some questions. You're not in custody, you're not in handcuffs, you're not in a police car, you're not in the police station, they're just talking to you. You have no expectation that anything you say in that situation will not be used against you in court. You need to know that. So the practical explanation here is that custody is about perception. It's not about labels. You can be in custody without handcuffs, and you can be free to leave when you're at the police station. Interrogation doesn't have to sound aggressive to count as an interrogation. In fact, as you all know from our study of the Reed technique, if they're doing it right, it won't sound aggressive. It's a slow burn to ease you into admitting to something. If the police are trying to get you to talk, it likely qualifies as an interrogation. And if you volunteer information, Miranda's not going to save you. So, Section 5, when Miranda is required. So, as I said earlier, Miranda requires both custody and interrogation. Missing either element defeats Miranda. When by defeats Miranda, it means your statement is likely to be admissible in court. So, if you're not read your Miranda rights, and you argue that your statement should be inadmissible, because remember, Miranda is about admissibility. And you argue that your statement shouldn't be admissible in court because you weren't read your Miranda rights, but you weren't in custody and you weren't being interrogated, then they weren't required to. And that interrogation piece is important too, because you can be in custody. They can put cuffs on you, tell you you're not free to go. You are under arrest and they haul you back to the police station. And while you're sitting there, you start talking and confess to something or admit to something and say, well, I was in custody. They didn't read me my Miranda rights. If they weren't interrogating you, they don't have to read your Miranda rights to you. You're volunteering that information even though you're in custody. So in order for the police to be required to present you with your Miranda rights and make sure you understand them, you have to be in custody and they have to be interrogating you. And remember, not being read your rights does not throw out your case. Suppression limits statements, not prosecutions, which means you could still be prosecuted and maybe they can't use that statement if it's deemed inadmissible, but they can still prosecute you. So the practical explanation here, Miranda is pretty narrow by design. If police skip the warning during custodial questioning, your statement may be suppressed, but the case does continue. Evidence still matters. Witnesses still matter. Miranda doesn't undo an investigation. It just controls how statements can be used, and that's it. So now that I think we have an overly thorough understanding of how Miranda works, let's talk about when you want to invoke those rights or how you invoke those rights. First of all, silence. It must be clearly invoked. What I mean by that is, if police are questioning you and you're just sitting there not saying a word, you're taking and invoking in your mind your right to remain silent. That will not stop the questioning. You not talking doesn't equal invoking your right to silence. You have to say, I am not answering any questions. This interrogation needs to stop. And remember, counsel or a lawyer is a much stronger protection than silence alone. So really what you should be saying is, I want a lawyer. I am not answering any questions. This interrogation needs to stop right now until my lawyer's here. Once counsel is invoked, very clearly like that, questioning must stop. I want you guys to think back to season 6, to the Sandy Melgar case. Remember how that question kept going on and on and on and on and on? And that statement was allowed to be used in court, even though we kept hearing her say she wanted a lawyer. But if you listen closely, what she was saying was, I think I need a lawyer. Should I get a lawyer? I think I need a lawyer here. Police officers are well trained to where they can skirt around this law. And if you just say, I think I need a lawyer, that is not the same as invoking your right to an attorney. So if you're in this situation, you need to clearly state, I'm invoking my right to counsel. I want a lawyer. Questioning needs to stop. And that's it. Don't say another word. Don't get sucked into the police trying to twist you up. Because it's almost guaranteed you're going to hear, what, you don't want to help? We're just trying to help you. It's going to make you look guilty if you'd ask for a lawyer. If we have to stop questioning you, then I can't help you. Don't even start interacting with them. Those police officers are trained to change your mind during that conversation. And by the way, if you say, I want an attorney and I want the questioning to stop, they start having that conversation with you and you start interacting with them again, a lot of case law will show that you have now undone your invocation of wanting an attorney and wanting the questioning to stop. Because even though you said, I want an attorney, I'm done, then you showed, well, I'm not done, I'm still talking. So that's it. A clear invocation of a lawyer and that you're not answering any more questions. Practical explanation here, courts do not reward ambiguity. Remember that. If you want to stop questioning, you have to say so clearly. Asking for a lawyer is the strongest move because it shuts everything down. Hoping police takes a hint is legally very, very risky. Now, Section 7, can what you say be used against you? So here's the thing. Statements, any statement you make, is admissible by default, which means if you're saying something, assume it's going to be used in court. There are only rare circumstances where a statement becomes inadmissible. So you can just assume the best practice, assume every word you say is going to be played in front of a jury. Just know that. Any non-custodial statement is admissible. Volunteered custodial statements are admissible. That's where you are, in fact, in custody, but you're not being interrogated and you say something anyway. That's admissible. The only time where a statement becomes inadmissible in most cases is when you're not Mirandized and you're in custody and you're being interrogated. Those statements under those circumstances are usually suppressed. But as you can see from that list, that's a small percentage. All of these factors have to be present in order for the statement to be suppressed and for it not to be admissible in court. You've been arrested, you're in custody, you're put into an interrogation room, and they start interrogating you without giving you your Miranda warnings. Then that statement can be suppressed, and pretty much only then. So the practical explanation is the safest assumption is that anything you say can and will be used against you. Veranda does not protect casual conversation, voluntary interviews, or spontaneous statements. The law favors admissibility, meaning the most likely outcome is that whatever you say will be admissible in court and will be used in court. Protection only comes when specific rules are triggered and clearly invoked. Now, moving on to our last section, section 8, to wrap this segment up. Are you free to leave? Remember, police are not required to tell you if you're free to leave. Courts use an objective, reasonable person test. Would a reasonable person feel that they could leave? And you can avoid having to fight that out in court and trying to make that case if you just ask the question directly. Am I free to leave? Am I in custody? Am I free to leave? And make them answer. So the practical explanation, freedom to leave is the dividing line. If you're free to go, walking away ends the encounter. If you're not, your rights change. Asking the question can be one of the most important things you do because it determines what protections apply next.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, this next segment is going to be shorter than the last one, I promise. I'm going to go through three real-world scenarios. And these are like questions that have come up over time, discussions I've seen on social media, that if you're ever in this situation, I just want you to know what the actual law is, because there's so many internet lawyers out there, and I guess I kind of sound like one of them now, that are posting on social media and telling you what your rights are, what you can do, what you can't do. And so I just want to be very clear about how these things actually work. And we're going to go from pretty simple to much more complicated. So scenario one is just a traffic stop, basic traffic stop regarding license registration. So you're pulled over for a traffic stop. The officer asks you for your driver's license and your registration. And all these are regarding what is a lawful order, by the way, and what you're required to do and what police are allowed to do. And this comes up because I see a lot, especially on like TikTok and things like that, people, arguing with cops saying, I'm not required to give you that. So here's the key point. It is a lawful order. If a police officer, any law enforcement officer of any kind, stops you and to ask for your license registration, you are required to provide the documents, and refusal itself can be a violation of the law. Police can order you to produce license registration and verify identity and driver status. You can decline answering investigative questions and consenting to searches. And if they're pressing, they're like, Do you mind if I look in your car? You can just say, I don't consent to searches and I'm not answering any questions. The practical meaning here is comply with documents request calmly, decline unrelated questioning if you choose to do so. But the key point here is it is a lawful order for an officer to tell you to produce your license and registration. Now, we're going to move into things escalate a little bit. So in scenario two, we're still on a traffic stop. What if you're on a traffic stop and the police order you out of the vehicle? This is a question that I see a lot. It's also something that is in the news right now because of the Minneapolis situation. And I just see all these people spouting off about what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do. So I want to be very clear. And actually, I was already planning on doing this. This is not regarding ICE or that situation. This is just in general, law enforcement officers. So during a lawful stop, the officer orders you to step out of the vehicle. So a lawful stop means they stopped you for a reason, right? So you're speeding, you got a taillight out. There's some reason they stopped you. You're blocking traffic, whatever. They stop you. And then they tell you, I want you to get out of the vehicle. Key point here is this is a lawful order, whether or not they give a reason. They don't have to tell you why. They don't have to have a certain suspicion. And this is a big, and the reason I'm explaining this is because I've seen, we had a case years ago. One of my students got into a situation like this where they just have in their mind, because I don't know, someone's told them, the internet has told them, they can't tell me to get out of my car unless they have a reason. They don't need a reason. They don't have to tell you a reason. They can tell you a reason that's wrong. It doesn't matter. You need to know that it is a, and this term is going to become important. It is a lawful order for the police to tell you to get out of the vehicle. And not complying with a lawful order is going to escalate things and get you into a whole lot of trouble down the road. So what police can do, they can order you out of your vehicle. They can temporarily detain you. They can use reasonable force if you refuse. So if they, and this is in the law, I literally had to just go through all of this in my studies at Purdue for my criminal justice degree, learning from the police side what they're allowed to do. So if an officer tells you to get out of your car and you refuse to get out of your car, the officer is allowed legally to use reasonable force if you refuse to get out. That includes specifically opening your door. If the door is locked, they can legally break your window and they can physically drag you out of that car. None of that is excessive force. You may feel like it is, I may feel like it is, but by the law, that is not excessive force. If you do not comply with a lawful order of getting out of your vehicle, which is always a lawful order by any law enforcement agent, they can physically remove you from that vehicle, even if that means breaking your window. It's probably why if you see some of these, you know, in TikToks and things like that, where you see situations like that, where the cop busts the window. And every time I see him, I'm just like, oh, what an asshole. Like he's using excessive force. And again, we may feel like it feels like it's excessive force, but the reason they're not hesitating to bust the window and pull him out is because they know the law allows them to do that. That is defined. That is the next step when you order somebody out of the car. To tell them to get out, try to compel them to get out, open the door and tell them to get out, open the door and drag them out. If the door's locked, break the window, open the door, drag them out. That is going to happen if you disobey that lawful order. Now, if you refuse it, and they will get you out of the car, almost certainly, the consequences are detention and most likely arrest. And additional charges are probably going to be tacked onto that, such as obstructing justice or resisting arrest, which means now you just took what may have been a speeding ticket and you turned it into some serious jail time. So the practical meaning of all this, if you're ever in a situation like this, if you're feeling like he shouldn't order me out of the car, I shouldn't get out of the car, I don't feel like this is lawful, comply first and then challenge the legality in court later. You are way better off to follow the lawful order. And I don't want, listen, I know who I'm talking to. It's my people, right? It's people that fight against wrongful convictions and investigate police corruption. I understand that. Okay, so I don't want this to seem like I'm like, just, oh, you know, cops can do no wrong. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, in this exact situation, get out of your car. That is a lawful order. You will not win that. So comply, get out of the car. And if you feel like something was done wrong, you can challenge that in court. The time to challenge it isn't on the street with the officer, because it's not going to end well for you. Now, this leads us into scenario number three, our last scenario in the segment. And that is another question I get a lot, and I've gotten a lot this week, of course, with everything that's going on, is a bystander interfering in police activity. What are you allowed to do? We're kind of in a day and age where a lot of people don't trust law enforcement. whether it's local police, federal police, ICE agents, whoever. And so there's a lot of protesting and things going on. If you're a person that is involved in that, all I want you to do is understand where the law lies so you know what you're risking. I'm not even telling you not to do something. That's not up to me. You decide what you want to do. You decide what risk you want to take. My job here is for you to understand what that risk is. And I hope that makes sense. So what are you allowed to do? So let's say in this scenario, you verbally intervene and approach an officer that you believe is acting improperly in some way. What can the police do in that situation and how should you react to it? So the police may order you to step back and get away to control the scene. So first things first, this triggering event that we've been talking about, that is a lawful order. If the police says, get back, get away from me, I'm in the middle of doing something, you're obstructing, you're interfering, get back. Even if you feel like you shouldn't, even if you don't want to, by the law, what I want you to know is that is a lawful order. What the police can do legally is they can order you lawfully to move away. And then if you don't, they can arrest you for interference if the refusal continues. And that's just if you are verbally trying to, you know, getting too close to them and verbally trying to make them stop something. What you can do, you can observe and you can record on your phone, camera, whatever you got from a reasonable distance, and you can verbally criticize them without interfering. You can call them every name in the book, tell them how much you hate them. You can do all that as long as you're not interfering and you're not encroaching on them enough to the point where they have ordered you to step away, which again is a lawful order. Beyond that, what you can do as far as intervening with law enforcement of any kind, there is a whole list of very clear rules. If you are obstructing any sort of investigation, including police officers driving down the road to get someone, police officers interrogating somebody, police officers arresting somebody, interference that can land you in jail that is a violation of the law, even if what they're doing is dead wrong, interfering by physically getting involved in the conflict, by part, and again, this is very poignant, but this was already in the outline, and that's why all this is so poignant right now. Using a vehicle to block them, all these things constitute obstruction of justice and interfering with a law enforcement operation. All of those things are illegal and will land you charges. If an officer orders you to stop doing that, that is a lawful order. And if you do not follow that lawful order, you can be detained and arrested and charged. Now, again, what I want to be clear here, because I can kind of feel some of you getting pissed at me already. One, I'm stating facts here. I'm not stating opinions. These are facts. Two, I'm not telling you not to do something. I'm only telling you what the law is and what you're risking. It's up to you if you're willing to risk that. That's not up to me. That's completely up to you. One of the situations that I was researching in this is, what if you see a police officer, think George Floyd, right? Police officer is pinning him down. He's saying, I can't breathe. What do you do? The answer to that is, I don't know what you do. That's a personal question you have to ask. What I can tell you is, at least on its face, if you go grab that officer and yank him off of him, which is the right thing to do, you very likely will be charged with obstruction of justice, assaulting a police officer. You'll be charged with all those things. And maybe you can battle that out in court if they were truly doing something that, you know, as vile as that. Does that mean you shouldn't do it? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that think of it like this in a completely different scenario. If you see a small child on the street and there's a bus traveling towards them, should you jump out in traffic, push the child out of the way to save them from the bus? In doing so, you know that you're going to get hit by the bus. So think of it in kind of in those terms, right? So you know the risk. You know the risk. This is going to cause great bodily harm to me to protect that child. And then you have to decide, are you that person? Are you willing to take that risk? All I want is for you to know that the bus is going to hit you if you make that step.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, now is the last uncomfortable segment of all this. And I'm sure you guys have kind of an idea where these things are going. And again, I want to preface this by just saying a couple of things. This is a question that I had posed to me, as I mentioned, by a listener, a person that I respect very much. It's also a question that that one of my children asked me. What do I do if ICE comes? And if different scenarios like this, and my child was led to believe through social media that ICE is not a real law enforcement agency, so the same rules don't apply. That's why they asked me the question. And then when I saw this other post that said, everything we just covered, what are the police rights? What are your rights? How should we interact with law enforcement agencies? As I told you, the thing that triggered me there was they said, how do we interact with ICE compared to a legitimate law enforcement agency? And the short answer to that is exactly the same. Exactly the same. ICE is, whether you like it or not, and you hate them and you hate everything they stand for, you not liking them does not make them not a legitimate law enforcement agency. And one of the things that I always try to pose to people as a litmus test is if you're someone, and I'm not saying any of you are, some of you are, I'm sure, some of you aren't, but if you're really driven by like partisan politics, I always ask you to look at the flip side of things, right? So some simple facts here. During the Biden administration, ICE detained and deported over 500,000 people. Were you protesting ICE and saying that they were not legitimate in any capacity doing any of their job during those years? We jump back to the Obama years. ICE during the Obama years, under his lead, deported more people than any other president in American history during his two terms. 3 million people. This isn't whataboutism or anything like that. It's just, I just want you to think for a second, because it does matter, because I know that I personally, I don't want to get too much into my personal thoughts because that's not what this is about, but I personally am really pissed off and do not like a lot of the things ICE is doing under this current administration. I'll be clear about that. But I'm also not going to sit here and pretend that they don't have a legitimate job to do, because I thought they did have a legitimate job to do when there was a different president, right? And those jobs still exist. Now, if you don't agree with that, that's okay. I'm just trying to kind of bring in our focus to what we're really talking about here. So when we get into, are they a legitimate law enforcement agency? First of all, just very clearly and by the law, yes, they are. They are a federal law enforcement agency. They do have some different limitations than other law enforcement agencies. They're not really going to apply in these scenarios that we just talked about, or the scenario that just happened in Minneapolis. I screen grab here, and I'm going to read to you. This is a meme that I have seen shared by at least 15 people that I know in the last 24 hours. And this is the kind of thing that worries me. Because understand, my only purpose here is for you guys to truly understand the law and truly understand what risks you're taking if you choose to intervene in something. So I'm just going to read you what this meme says. It looks very official. It says ICE, what they can and cannot do. It says, first of all, they are not a police force. ICE is an immigration agency, not general law enforcement. That's not true. They are, in fact, a police force. They are a law enforcement agency, which we'll get into more here in a couple seconds. When it comes to stopping vehicles, it says, can only stop a vehicle if they have reasonable suspicion of an immigration violation or an official warrant. No random stops allowed. So here's the thing about that. No random stops are allowed by any law enforcement agency. So that's irrelevant. As far as ICE, like pulling over a vehicle, it is true. They can't just pull you over for speeding. That's outside of their purview. They have to be suspecting someone who they're investigating, and they have a reason to believe that there's an immigration violation. Then they can pull them over like a normal police officer would. So that is true, but it's also, there's a lot of nuance there, because the purpose of this post, the one particular one I grabbed the screenshot from in their comments above it, was directly talking about like this situation in Minneapolis, how they had no right to tell her to get out of that car or any of that because they don't have any rights to stop cars. Well, that's not the case here. Again, we'll get into it, but that car was interfering with an investigation. Moving on, detention rules. It says they can only detain you if they have a reasonable suspicion of you being undocumented or a valid immigration warrant. It says they cannot detain U.S. citizens in big, bold, red background. You need to know that is false. That is completely inaccurate, is completely incorrect. ICE agents do have the authority to detain U.S. citizens in certain circumstances. And then it says use of firearms. It says they can only draw a gun if an immediate threat of serious harm. They can't use guns to intimidate. That's true of all law enforcement. They can't just point guns at you. And then it says bystanders. ICE has no authority over U.S. citizens. People filming or passing by, being nearby is not a crime. This one also, I feel, is going to get a lot of people in a lot of trouble. Probably already has. There's probably been a lot of people arrested for this. And we've already seen one person has been shot and killed. And I want to be very clear here. This is not me saying that it's her fault she was killed. This is not me victim blaming. I'm just saying the circumstances leading up to it. That incident in Minneapolis, I'm not getting into. What I will tell you is there are 10 seconds of that incident that are up for debate, 100%. And people are arguing back and forth. I'm not taking opinion because I don't have all the facts. I think Kristi Noem was wrong to come out right after it happened and say it was absolutely a good shoot. That is not policy. That is not what anything that I've read in the DOJ standards for my class says. It says that you put them on administrative leave and you investigate fully before making a determination. But I also think that the mayor shouldn't have come out and said that it was murder before everybody has the facts. I work in wrongful convictions. You're not going to get me to convict somebody without the facts. And you guys have heard that consistently from me for 11 years. I'll tell you from what I know so far, I absolutely don't like the way that went down. I think it was wrong, but I think there's a lot more to dig into. That's not what this is about. But what I tell you before those 10 seconds, everything that happened before there, as far as how it relates to the law, is not up for debate. It's actually very, very clear. And I feel like part of the things that pushes situations like this is people keep seeing this. Well, I read on the internet that ICE has absolutely no authority over U.S. citizens, and they can't stop you from being involved in this. I want you to know that's not true. So getting to the question, how do you interact with ICE agents as opposed to other law enforcement agencies? As I said, the short answer is it's the same. It's exactly the same. I'm going to read it. I wrote all this out, so I'm going to kind of read this to you, and I have a couple scenarios here. So ICE's authority over U.S. citizens, ICE agents are federal law enforcement officers. While their primary mission involves immigration enforcement, they also possess general federal law enforcement authority. Their authority over U.S. citizens does not arise from immigration law, but from their role as federal officers enforcing criminal law and maintaining officer and public safety. Now, ICE cannot detain U.S. citizens for civil immigration violations. However, and this is where you need to be paying attention, ICE can detain U.S. citizens for criminal violations, obstruction of justice, resisting arrest, or interfering with federal officers. So, and this is the part where I said if you don't want to hear facts that are going to maybe challenge the way you are thinking about this, it's a good time to turn it off, because I'm not trying to shit on you. I'm not trying to endorse anything that's happening. I'm telling you that this is just the law. They can arrest you for interfering with them. U.S. citizens, they can arrest you for obstructing them. They can arrest you for resisting. Those are all criminal violations. Just because you don't like them and don't like what they do does not mean they are not a legitimate law enforcement agency. So I want to circle back to, because let's not pretend it's not relevant, because it is. The second scenario I gave you with other law enforcement agencies, if you're ordered out of a vehicle, this is what the law says. If an ICE agent stops or encounters a vehicle and orders a U.S. citizen to exit, that order is treated as a lawful safety-related order. It is a lawful order. If the individual refuses to get out of the car, ICE agents may use reasonable force to enforce the order. This can include opening the door, breaking a window, or physically removing the person. The individual may be detained or arrested for obstruction or resisting a federal officer. And those are serious charges. We're not talking about a night in jail. Like, you could end up in prison for this. When I was looking at the sentencing, it was a little unclear, but it looked like it could be from 1 year up to 10 years just for not obeying the order when they tell you to get out of the fucking car. And part of the misconception is, and part of what I'm seeing people saying, is that, well, they're not, because I saw a meme that says that they don't have authority over U.S. citizens, they have to call local police to take care of that. They do not. The law does not require them to call local police simply because the individual is a U.S. citizen. The legality depends on whether the initial encounter was lawful, not on citizenship. So you can think of a million different scenarios that aren't lawful, but if we're looking at the one we're looking at, if ICE agents are driving down the street and you pull your car in front of them and turn it sideways in the road in front of them, you are now obstructing. You have now broke the law. If they tell you to move and you don't, now you've disobeyed a lawful order. Then they tell you to get out of the car. Now you've disobeyed another lawful order. They have every right to bust your window, grab your door, open it, that door, and yank you out. I hate that this is being put on that situation that happened. But at the same time, you need to understand, if, because I believe that we have justice warriors as part of this audience, and some of you may very well find yourself in these situations. And so I need you to understand what the risks are. And by the way, the risk should not be getting shot. I want to be very clear on that. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, in that situation, if she hadn't made contact with the officer, if he hadn't shot her, if none of that happened, the end result would have been, they would have gotten her eventually, and they would have arrested her, and she would have been sent to jail and possibly ended up in prison. I just need you to understand that risk. And with that, I'm going to leave it there. I've already gone on longer than I meant to tonight. Hopefully everybody's still with me. To end things out, I just want to be clear to you guys. The reason that I'm telling you all this is because I need you to understand the risk. I need you to know that if you step into traffic to push that kid out of the way, that you know you're going to take on bodily harm in the process in that scenario. In these scenarios, if you're making choices to intervene, which is your choice, you just need to understand where your risks are at and what the potential outcome is. On a personal note, I would love it if we would put more thought as a society into what we can do that's actually going to make a difference. Because that situation in Minnesota, woman was shot and killed. And for what? Because when it was over, whoever those ICE agents were going to go detain and deport, whatever that operation was, do you know what happened afterwards? After she was killed, they still went and did it anyway. So you need to think about what you're doing, what the risks are, and what you think the actual practical outcome is going to be. Is you getting arrested and taking away from your family going to actually stop the thing you're trying to stop? Or are there better ways? So I'm not telling you not to fight. I'm not even telling you how to fight. I'm just suggesting that maybe there's a better way. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @TruthJusticePod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.